It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Game week continues here with the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. I'm Eric Kane with Brent Hubbs and Austin Price. As always, a big thank you to our presenting sponsors. That is Exterior Home Solutions. They've been local and trusted since 1999. If you have a need for renovation, for home repair, garage, windows, whatever that may be, contact Exterior Home Solutions today. That phone number is 865-524-5888, or you can visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Got a bunch of questions that we're going to try to get through as many as we can. We're going to start with old coach. With Coach Heupel going into his fourth season, what grade would you give him from when he took over to where he's going into this year? In short, how do you guys think that he has handled all these issues and how he's built the roster?
Now, I think he's given an A.
Yeah, I think he's been fantastic. I mean, now, I think you got to give the administration and those around him a lot of credit for helping him to navigate the what they called the speed bump that was the NCAA stuff. But I think I said this, AP and Eric, a couple of weeks ago. I don't think the coaches at Tennessee have gotten enough credit for their roster management skills in a time where it was all brand new and everybody was trying to figure out how to do roster management. I think you look at Vitello's roster management. I think you look at Rick Barnes. And I certainly think you look at Josh Heupel's roster management. Use of the portal in a positive way, not letting it be a huge problem for your program after you got here. Now, you lost all those guys as you were coming in, but that wasn't your fault. But since then, I think the roster management, throw in NIL with that, Austin, has given Josh Heupel, put him where he's at ahead of schedule, in my opinion, in a rebuild.
Yeah, I agree. Again, if you had told me that 2 years after 2020, they'd be sitting there in the Orange Bowl at 11-2 holding a trophy and tossing oranges around, I told you, you're nuts. Like, I mean, they were able to, you know, flip things with, you know, just kind of a down home, like laid back, you know, family oriented locker room feel. Coach Heupel is a player's coach. His coaches helped him around him. Now, don't get me wrong, they have their warts. Everybody's got their warts. Like, I mean, like they still have to figure out how to be better in recruiting. Like, I mean, they've done a fantastic job this cycle, but you got to turn that into another one next year and the year after that. I mean, but I mean, like at the same time, like what you've seen Josh Heupel take what a lot of people called weaknesses, and you know, they're not weaknesses here. Like, he's been able to recruit just fine. And you're right. I mean, the administration, you know, helped him out. His coaches helped him out. And then his support staff. I mean, the Scott Altizers, Brandon Lawson, Stray Johnsons, Billy Hies, all those people play a role. Billy Ray Johnson, they all play a role. They all play their role. And, you know, that all helps Coach Heupel. And as Coach Vitello always says, I get a lot of the credit when I don't deserve it. And I'm sure Coach Heupel would tell you the same thing. The people around him as a collective unit have made this thing much better in quick order.
Yeah, I think the transfer portal has helped them out a good bit. I think that, and you guys can certainly speak on this more than I can, but I think that they've done a great job of evolving and improving and how they recruit. I mean, Heupel targets his quarterback early, you know, and he tries to go get a pass rusher. Casting a wider net in certain areas, you've seen it pay dividends this cycle. And then I think he's just a good X's and O's coach as well. And in terms, more so in terms of developing the quarterback position, and we've all seen that on display with Hendon, and hopefully we're going to see it here with Nico. Let's go to Nashville 615. How confident are you about the depth? Injuries are going to happen, but take one starter out of every position group except quarterback. What is your win projection? For example, how do you feel about this team if these guys are out? Joshua Joseph, Samari Thomas, Keenan Peely, Turrentine, Gibson, Squirrel, Sampson, Spraggins. I think we can all agree that if all those guys are out, that's not good for Tennessee. But to his point, what do you like about the depth overall of this football team?
I think if you took Keenan Peely out, that would hurt the team. Not to say that they don't have quality linebackers behind him, but I just think, you know, Peely from a leadership standpoint, all of those things, I think that would be a little bit of a blow. I don't think it's much of a blow if you lose Omari Thomas, and I love Big O. You have such a deep defensive line, you plug in the next guy. Like, yeah. You know, that's why, right? Like, there's just – I mean, you have a bunch of guys that could play that role of starter, that aren't. And so I think most of those guys you named, I don't think my projection would change a whole lot. I mean, Peely might affect it some. You know, would it affect it with Dylan Sampson? I don't know. I think it depends on what we see once we get going, you know, and what you see out of Cam Seldon and Deshaun Bishop, Peyton Lewis, and Khalifa Keith.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, at guard, is there a plug-and-play guy for Spraggins? I mean, maybe not to that degree, to that talent level, but can they survive up there with an injury to a guy like Spraggins? Yeah, I mean, I think you're much more concerned if you have an injury at tackle than you are if you have an injury at guard. Exactly what that looks like from a protection standpoint for Nico. You know, and I think in the secondary, we're all still trying to figure out what they are. So I don't know. I mean, I think losing Ricky Gibson would be a tough injury to have, but yeah. You know, I mean, where is Jalen McMurray? How quick could he step in and play, and what could he do there? So, yeah, I mean, maybe a game, but I don't know that it would be like outside of quarterback. I don't know that you would go, man, you know, I mean, I think Joshua Joseph's going to have a really good year. I do. But I also think that you could push Caleb Herring into that role in the Rabbits package, and you could find an effective player there. So I think they've got enough depth to overcome some injuries in a lot of places. Not every place, but a lot of places.
A player he didn't mention here that I would have some concern if he were to miss some time would be Cooper.
No, no doubt. I mean, you know, that, to me, that goes with the quarterback. I mean, okay. You know, it's not as – maybe not as directly significant as the quarterback, but I think we saw the difference in this team offensively when Cooper Mays wasn't on the field a year ago. I think now with a young quarterback, the help that Cooper has to give, you know, or should give Nico up front with protections and different things, I think that would be a tough loss because there's not a plug-and-play center that you would not have a significant drop-off from.
Yeah. I am 4DOEC wants to know, will the Vols go hard after Jason Witten's son?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why they offered him. I mean, you know, he's just a 2027, so just a sophomore this fall, and but I mean, he was just a freshman last year. And if you look where he's at physically, I mean, Hubbard, he more than passes the eye test. So, yeah, that's not going to be a surprise to watch them go after Jason's kid.
Yeah, and I'll say this too, and Jason loves Tennessee. I mean, Jason Witten has no problem with anything at Tennessee. I think everybody should keep in mind that those boys have lived their entire life in the state of Texas. That they've been to minimal Tennessee events and Tennessee affairs. So, I mean, it's a legacy, but it's not going to be any kind of lay down legacy. And not because Jason and his wife don't have great affinity for Tennessee. It's just those boys haven't been around Tennessee. They've not been ingrained to a bunch of things Tennessee. So, you know, that doesn't make it just an automatic given. Oh, well, Tennessee's immediately the leader because it's Jason Witten's kid, in my opinion.
No, but I mean, like, look at LeVar Arrington III. I mean, you know, he never grew up around Penn State because it was always in the NFL. They live in L.A., you know, but at the end of the day, you're right in saying you have to assume that he's not a lay down. You have to recruit him as such. But the more, you know, you do and he gets in here for games, does that seeing his dad on pictures and stuff around the stadium, does that lean on him?
Yeah, good point.
I think that certainly can alter how a 16, 17-year-old kid thinks about a place. And you can make up for a lot of lost time considering you're starting and going into a sophomore year.
Good point. Yep.
Couple of questions here from a new handle that I've never seen before. Big Ball Lover 69. We'll start here. Does Boo showcase his athleticism in week one? Any predictions on other young and experienced players showcasing their skills this weekend?
I don't know how to answer that question. I mean, if he's out there playing, he's going to showcase his athleticism. Am I wrong in saying that? I mean, he's out there running around. I mean, he's going to be able to showcase it.
Yeah, I mean, flash. He's going to make some plays.
Well, I mean, flash, yes. Yeah, I think he'll make plays. I mean, I hope he gets a punt return. I want to see him in a punt return game and see what that looks like. But, yeah, I mean, athletically, he should show up. You know, even if he goes the wrong way, he should show up, right? How many times have we seen games against teams where a guy looks like, you know, he runs for whatever yards or he makes these many plays and everybody goes, hey, this guy, that guy, wow, this guy's a really good And you talk to the coaches afterwards. Well, he busted on, you know, 17 snaps, but nobody has a clue because he's athletically so good and superior to what he's playing that he shows up. So, yeah, I mean, it would be a disappointment if Boo Carter doesn't show up on the eyeball test to fans sitting in the stands.
Do you think the secondary and wide receiver rotations are shaken out by the Oklahoma game? If so, given no injuries, what are your predicted rotations by the Oklahoma week? It's funny he mentions Oklahoma. I remember back in 2021, Brent, Tennessee settled on their wide receivers after week four, that Florida game.
They dropped the ball across the middle.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to be mean, but I mean, he dropped that ball across the middle, and Alex Golish went, I'm playing three because I can only trust three.
On fourth down, no less.
Right, AP? I mean, that's how it sorted itself out, because they walked out of that Florida game going, I trust three players and three players only at the receiver position. It was Velus Jones, Cedric Tillman, and Javonte Payton. And that's who we're going to roll with.
And they really only used two of them.
Yeah. I mean, after the first quarter in particular. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know that it's going to shake itself out. I think they feel more confident. Now, if guys don't perform, if a guy gets out there and lays an egg or goes the wrong way or drops balls or, you know, whatever, maybe that does that. But I don't know if guys are playing well that they're going to come back and go, okay, these are our four or these are our six guys, and that's all we're going to play. I mean, I think in this day and age, AP, if guys are playing well, you got to keep them engaged. You got to do things to keep them engaged. So I don't know how much they're looking to narrow it down or come up with an order at that point. If guys are playing well, now if you've got separation, then that's a total different thing.
As we've heard all fall camp, you just like when Brew talking about like the. How taxing it was that 22 season playing all those snaps. I just think that they are determined to make sure that they rotate more with the receivers in 2024. And so until otherwise, I will, you know, I'm going to kind of go and buy into that because the players are talking that way. If the players weren't talking that way, it'd be different. But the players are talking like, hey, you know, we need to spell it that way. We're, you know, all fresh. The main guys are fresh in the fourth quarter and fresh late in the year. So I'm going to buy into that a little bit just because the players are the one doing the talking about it.
Peyton for Prez, if they don't start Boo Carter, why recruit high school DBs?
Well, you recruit high school DBs because those guys are going to develop and play. Okay. And Boo Carter is going to play whether he starts or he doesn't start. I think if he doesn't start the first game, I don't think you go, well, everybody should be a transfer. I mean, listen, he's going to play a lot. And how much that sorts itself out through the first couple of weeks, we're going to find out how it goes. But, I mean, Boo Carter has not done anything to disappoint anybody at Tennessee. I think where this is at is more a credit to Christian Harrison putting himself in a position, who was a high school kid, by the way, versus – It would be different if Boo Carter was really talented, had a great camp, Austin, and was getting beat out by a transfer, you know, because they just took somebody past him. I mean, I think Boo Carter is going to be the starter at some point this year. I think this whole narrative is not going to be a big deal as we move forward, because I think Boo's going to end up being the guy. But yeah, I mean, you're going to continue to recruit. You've got to continue to recruit high school players and high school defensive backs because you're playing high school defensive backs.
What do we say in recruiting? If you win, they will come.
Absolutely.
Well, in this instance, if you make plays, you'll stay in the game. Yeah. So if Boo Carter goes out and plays like everybody hopes Boo Carter is going to play, then Boo Carter's not going to come off the field, you know, in most instances. So, you know, again, I think, you know, Boo will get a lot of playing time Saturday. It'll be up to Boo to prove he deserves more playing time going forward.
Best place to buy a shirt or jersey to support current student athletes?
Well, the Vol Club's got their pop-up shop down there, you know, near Gay Street, which would be a good spot to go and buy apparel. They've got a lot of unique apparel that makes a lot of sense. And then you've got, you know, the Vol Shop / Hound Dogs, a few others, you know, that, you know, they sell like player oriented shirts that, you know, help, you know, give back to certain players.
you download the Ball Club app, there's a shop on there as well.
Yes.
As well as tons of VolQuest content. Let's go here to Blue Tick. After seeing some practices over fall camp, Deshaun Bishop has an uncanny ability to always get north. Could we see him in goal line situations?
I don't think that they're going to say, okay, we're inside the 20. Let's rotate running backs.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, could he be a guy? I mean, I think he should be a part of the rotation. And much like Boo Carter, he's got to continue to do the things he's done to stay a part of that rotation.
Yeah.
Because Peyton Lewis is coming. He's developing. Cam Seldon is healthy. He's developing, right? Dylan Sampson is there. He was a touchdown maker, right? I mean, he's the guy, like, they run down the field and they put in Dylan Sampson. He scored touchdowns last year. Now some of that was running backs tapping out at that point too, but maybe in certain situations they could potentially look at that. I mean, do they want to go a bigger back and do some things? I mean, we'll see, but I think Deshaun Bishop has done a terrific job of putting himself in a position to help this football team. What Deshaun Bishop has to do now, and I think this is a challenge, Austin, and Eric, you jump in here too, is to stay locked in as well as he's been when that room gets more crowded. Because it's easy to get locked in going to practice and going to scrimmage when you know you're going to be the starter in the scrimmage. You're going to get the first runs. You're going to be behind the first team. You're going to get a bunch of carries, you know, because the room's lighter. Now that room is heavier because of guys healthy and because of the development of a freshman like Peyton Lewis. Your challenge is to stay engaged knowing that the rotation's getting heavier than what you've experienced for the last month. And I think that can be mentally tough on some guys.
I think it can absolutely be tough on some guys. And it kind of goes back to the depth chart conversation. I don't think they did this specifically for Deshaun Bishop, but that's a clear example, right? Dylan Sampson shouldn't have an or there, but it's Dylan Sampson or Cam Seldon or Deshaun Bishop, because, you know, Seldon's been banged up. You know, Lewis is a young guy, you know. Dylan Sampson has been limited. I mean, these guys have not had a full fall camp, so everybody needs to be locked in and engaged. And Deshaun Bishop's always been there. So, yeah, I think it became really tough when, you know, he's been getting the first couple of snaps and all the stuff, and he's been RB1 with the first team. When all these guys come back and then all of a sudden one day in practice he's RB3 or RB4. I mean, it's discouraging, but I think that's a big challenge for him, and he's matured a lot, and hopefully he can handle that. And I just hope he goes out there and does some good things on Saturday to where it will kind of keep him motivated as well. Because again, in 2021, man, against Ole Miss, they handed the football off to a walk-on running back for a couple of carries. I mean, you better stay ready to roll and locked in. Aikens VFL 24 says, how does the Leo room look moving forward? Obviously, we are deep this year, but does Okoye and Lindstrom flash enough to be contributors next year? Does Lindstrom grow into a strong side defensive end? I figured we would get a body in the 2025 class. AP, Lindstrom's a strong side defensive end to begin with. He just needs to put on some weight. He's not a Leo.
Correct. I agree. And then we'll see on Okoye. You know, we've got to continue to progress. But, I mean,
he's been banged up too, by the way.
He has, but they like him a lot more, and he seems way more comfortable at defense than he ever was at tight end. But, I mean, after this year, I mean, one would think Josh Josephs is the lead dog a year from now, unless he just, you know, totally blows up this year and goes pro. And then Caleb Herring and Jordan Ross.
Drunk_Smokey, what game scares you the most? Not most likely to lose, but maybe a sleeper, maybe a trap game like Arkansas or Mississippi State. A year-defining loss. Is there a game that kind of gives you pause when we're going through that schedule? I'll tell you mine, and it's not because I think Tennessee should wallop them, but it's an SEC team, and it's on the road. That game in Fayetteville, Arkansas, is the one that kind of gives me pause. I mean, Tennessee should drill them, but because of the factors playing away from home, it's never easy. Anything can happen. That game kind of, I'm always like, yeah, it's a win, but it's like, it's kind of a weird, you know, funky trip as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the one that, you know, because it's kind of sandwiched around some stuff, and
you're coming out of a bye week, which does help.
Which does help. I don't know what Arkansas is going to look like. I mean, some of the Arkansas people think that the transfer quarterback is going to make them vastly different than they were a year ago. If they get off to a good start, they could certainly be hot. If it's off to a bad start, what does that thing look like? I don't have any idea. I mean, you got an offensive coordinator who I'm not sure that was the head coach's first choice, even though he sold it like it has been. You know, I don't know all the dynamics at Arkansas that could make that deal. And I guess this is not a trap game, but I mean, I think that game in Charlotte's just, I mean, that's the one to me that is going to be really fascinating to see, because it's a first, you know, for a lot of guys on a road trip. You know, I think that the NC State game is, I think that could be kind of an ugly grind, kind of a, not ugly low scoring, but just a stressful day at the ball yard is where I think that game might be. But that's my opinion. Yeah, just a different style game. I mean, you know, it won't be – I think there'll be more points, but I don't know that it'll be, you know, I don't know that it'll be everybody standing on the sidelines smiling and laughing in the fourth quarter.
Everything Eric said about Arkansas, I think checks off. Now, when you look at Tennessee's coming off a bye week, when you look at Arkansas's got to play Oklahoma State, not this weekend, but next weekend, and then the 2 weeks prior – to Tennessee coming to Fayetteville, they go to Auburn and to Texas A&M. Like, depending on how those games shake out, Arkansas may be mentally checked out by the time the Vols roll into Fayetteville, or be on their last legs with their last punch. So, you know.
Yeah. There's such an unknown that could be a heck of a game. Or that could, you know, a real challenge for Tennessee, or that could not be much of a challenge. Depending
road on games are road games for a reason. And so I don't think you can ever just go, yep, that's a win. I mean, unless you're going to Vanderbilt or Kentucky.
There is one publication a couple of weeks ago that, you know, put out a story, you know, talking season to the max. I mean, we're almost done with that, thankfully. But trap games teams should be scared of. And one of those was listed Tennessee at Arkansas. And one of the reasonings was, you know, Tennessee – you know, drops a game on the road at Oklahoma, maybe they're not motivated, maybe they're down in the dumps going to Arkansas. Like, no, there's a bye week in between. You mean they're not going to have their minds right after not playing the next week? No, that would be a reason I say that's just hogwash. Let's go to Cosmo Kramer. Why do you think Gaston Moore stayed around the last few years instead of transferring to a school like Southern Miss, et cetera, where he would have had a chance to play?
I think he likes it here. I mean, I think he likes being a part of this. I think the student athlete experience at Tennessee is pretty good, AP.
Correct. I mean, I think what you learn is when kids leave is plenty of other kids message you back and go, grass isn't greener. And again, you get treated much better at Tennessee or Alabama or Georgia than you do at those lower levels. You get nicer things. You get steaks coming off the field, heading to the bus, and not – PB&Js. All that stuff matters.
Yeah, it does. It does, especially to an 18 to 22 year old.
When Eric played at Carson Newman, he used to get the hoagie shop coming off the bus.
No, we used to. It didn't matter what trip it was. We would find Golden Corral. We would find a Golden Corral, and we would stop at that Golden Corral for breakfast, for lunch, and sometimes dinner. Every single trip. Haven't been back since. All right. We got plenty more questions to get into, but first let's get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on. We got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby. It's game. Let's go.
Hey, Sterling, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
Again, that phone number for Exterior Home Solution is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. All right, here's my question, AP. Who did it better?
Those people looked a lot more comfortable on a roof than I did.
Who did it better? You know, Sterling up there dancing on the roof or Hubs? Hubs did a good job. Right?
I mean, he really did. It was only him coming off the roof that was a thrill a minute.
He did fine.
Your roof, it's the most important protection against nature for your home or your business.
He did fine. I don't I mean, you know.
If only people knew.
Let's go to Mr. Rocky Top Rowdy. What is each of your all's favorite game day tradition that is not specifically the game? Seeing friends at tailgates before kickoff or ice cream chest in the press box?
Well, I mean,
just in the press box.
You got to get in line early for that one. You better be in line before the 2 minute warning happens if you're going to get some ice cream at the half. That line forms really quickly. So I don't participate in that. Here's a goofy one for me: is if it's a noon game like this week, there will be a stop at Hardee's. I will eat a biscuit either in the car or somewhere on campus with a friend or two, and then going into the stadium when it's empty. You know, getting there when it's just real quiet and it's just I go down on the field or whatever, and there's no one around. I think that's one of the coolest times in that stadium on game day because everything is going on outside. It's starting to build outside, but inside it's just really, really quiet and there's just not a lot happening. And then all of a sudden in a couple hours, it becomes its own, you know, living, breathing city. And it's a show. So I like that peaceful time right before it all opens up and gets started.
Yeah. For me, it's walking to the stadium with Kane and everybody yelling, EC, Kaner, Kaner.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is it takes Austin an hour to get there because he's got to stop and take so many pictures and sign autographs on his
2 minute drill, 11:30 Kane. Kane shows up at 11:30. It's 11:45. Where he at? He's signing autographs, kissing babies. That's AP.
My favorite Tennessee tradition that's outside the stadium is the salute to the Hillbilly Band. I think that Vol walks great and all that, but I love the band. I love the music. I love all that. To me, that's pageantry in college football. Watching them walk across the bridge, all that. That stuff just, you know, as an East Tennessee guy, a Tennessee guy who went to school there, that's what brings back the feels of college.
For me, it's not really a tradition, but as you guys know, I got, you know, my parking pass got moved to the 11th Street Garage last year. Back there again for 2024. Looking forward to it. So I've got a bit of a walk. Yeah, I got a bit. Me and Grant Ramey got a bit of a walk to the stadium. It's not bad at all, unless it's like Saturday. It's gonna be like 98 degrees or whatever. But I just love seeing all the fans pile into the stadium. I mean, I'm getting there around about the Vol walk time and all that.
Getting there right about kickoff.
Yeah, and just seeing everybody pile in and seeing signs and little kids and all that. I just think that's really, really neat. And since it's a long, long walk, I get to see a lot of fans and certainly get more of the feel for the actual game atmosphere than, you know, being up in the press box. So I enjoy that walk every Saturday for a home game. And parking and going to some tailgates and that garage there. I've done that a time or two before I head in the stadium.
I enjoy my G3. Bill, thanks, man. Appreciate you.
Yeah. Maybe I should call Bill, see if he can hook me up this year. Neyland Green, with all the positive news about former UT football players making NFL rosters, please discuss how much, if any, this impacts upcoming high school sophomores and juniors. Brent, I think this impacts them a lot, right? If you prove that you can get developed and go and have a shot at a roster in the National Football League, heck yeah, this is great for Josh Heupel.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's one thing to understand is that's the initial 53. So there may be some more movement. So not everybody is locked in. It, you know, other teams will look at who was cut on Monday and might make a roster move. I mean, so there's some things that could change.
Don't you put that evil on us, Ricky Bobby.
No, I'm just reminding people that those things that can happen. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there was a thread on the board on Tuesday talking about the number of receivers Josh Heupel's got in the NFL right now. Now, you want those guys to go produce and put up numbers, but, I mean, you're sitting here and these guys are making the league because of how they were developed in their time at Tennessee. I mean – it's a great selling point, right? I mean, where was Jalen Hyatt's career before Josh Heupel got here? Where was Cedric Tillman's career? You know, I mean, Ramel Keaton didn't have the year he wanted to have in 23, but, you know, he's gone and made the Raiders roster. And credit him because he played really well in the preseason, but he obviously was developed on how to play as well. You know, he didn't play as well as he wanted to in Tennessee's offense in 23, but the guy got better throughout his Tennessee career as a route runner and all of those types of things. So, I mean, absolutely. The more people you can sell that you've got in the NFL, the better off you are in recruiting. I think that's a given. And if you're Mike Eckler, Austin, you get to walk into special teams meeting and you get to hold up the D. Williams picture and go, fellas, what I'm saying makes sense. I mean, you look at guys who are out there, when you go through the draft process and you're looking at undrafted free agents and all those types of things, the first thing you look at is, do they play teams? Are they willing to play teams? Were they a teams player in college? Were they a special teams guy in college? What kind of are they pigeonholed into one thing, or can they do multiple things? The more diversity you have, the more you can do, the better off you are. And I think that plays out really well. So I think it's a continued great selling point for Mike Eckler that he was talking about a couple of Saturdays ago, because it's not just a part of the game. It is an art of the game. Special teams is important. The new kickoff rule in the NFL makes that play more valuable. Punt coverage, all those things are really important. So I think that's a big selling point. I think anytime you can stand up to people and say, hey, here's guys who we have, here's guys who were drafted, or here's guys who made rosters. Okay. This is what happens if you come here, come be a part of things here. I think it absolutely gets their attention.
All of All 31 wants to know, is it possible that the defense leads the way this year instead of the offense, or is that just ludicrous with Heupel as our coach and Nico at quarterback?
I don't think it's ludicrous at all. I mean, I think there'll be absolutely an instance or two in this season where, you know, Nico is having a redshirt freshman moment and isn't playing, you know, his best, and the defense has to pick him up, you know? So, I mean, I can absolutely believe that at least at certain spells, the defense is going to lead.
Yeah. I mean, we saw that like a year ago. Defense special teams won the Texas A&M game. That wasn't the offense. I mean, Josh Heupel played field position, special teams made a play, defense, you know, did what they did. And as a result, Tennessee overcame two red zone turnovers on offense and had a bad day. Are they going to lead them for 12 games? I don't know that any defense is leading a team for 12 games in this era of college football. You better play some complimentary football, not to sound like Butch Jones, but you better have some offense out there who can help you out, because there's going to be games where you're going to have to score points, because you're not going to play, you know, you're not going to go through a 16-game season if you're a playoff team holding teams to, you know, 17 points a game or whatever. I mean, you're going to have some days where you got to score. But there's also going to be some days, Eric, where your defense is going to have to rise to the occasion and bail your offense out. That's part of being a team.
Yeah, people can pile on Butch Jones all they want, but I can't stand when people make fun of the phrase complimentary football, because it is tried and true. It is real. Like, I mean, you got to compliment one another, because not every year is going to be like 2022's offense. And so, yeah, for sure, you got to be able to pick each other up. And I think this defense is. I think this defensive front seven is going to take over the game in Norman, Oklahoma. I do. In the third and fourth quarter, I do. And it's going to be a tough atmosphere for Nico, first start on the road, hostile environment. That's a good team in my opinion. But I think the example I'm looking forward to is seeing that defensive front seven complementing Tennessee's offense in the second half of that football game. And we'll see what happens. Rodney Harrison, has he attended any Tennessee practices or had any type of hands-on role with the program? AP, of course, Christian Harrison is his son.
To my knowledge, no. I mean, he's been here, but I mean, like, I don't think he's been involved in any shape or form.
I don't think he's stepping out on the practice field, you know, jumping into drills or helping anything like that. I think he's a dad to his son. I don't think he's former NFL player who's, coming to try to be a coach or help and get in the middle of anything. I just don't think that's been his style.
Aside from Nico and Pierce, by the fourth or the fifth game of the season, while we're watching SEC Now, SEC Nation, College Game Day, etc., what one Tennessee player will we hear the most who's talked about?
I could see Ethan Davis being a guy that people are sort of intrigued by, because that position's so different if he does some things early. Chris Brazel, you know, I think defensively, Arion Carter could be a guy that generates some buzz. I'm not saying that he's going to be highlighted on College Game Day necessarily, but I think that's a guy who could, you know, be a guy that people talk about. I think the Peely story, if he stays healthy, is going to be a story that's talked about a lot.
I agree with that.
If he stays healthy and plays well, everybody's going to be talking about, you know, the old man in the middle for Tennessee. because that's an easy story to do. He's a good interview. He's got a good story. He's overcome, you know, he's in this day and age of guys playing extra years of college football. He's one of those stories. So I think that's an easy one if he stays healthy.
I think if one of those corners, anybody for that matter, but I think, you know, Ricky or Jermod, McCoy, Gibson, one of those corners makes a couple of early, you know, interceptions or, you know, takeaways first couple games of the year, they're going to be one that continues to be brought up in conversation about Tennessee's defense, you know, throughout the season. Like Kamal Haben was last year before his injury. MBR, what current or recent players do you think would make great coaches and why? I saw Dylan Sampson's video firing up his teammates and thought, man, I'd run through a wall for that guy.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much more to coaching than being just a motivated guy. I mean, I don't know who's got a desire to do that. I mean, I don't know what anybody's long-term plans are. I mean,
Gaston Moore.
Yeah, I mean, Gaston Moore would make a lot of sense.
Parker Ball's GAing right now.
I mean, I don't know that anybody had Parker Ball 2 years ago or 3 years ago as a future coach. I mean, I didn't know anything about Parker Ball, what he wanted to do, but that's obviously what he's trying to do and has evolved with things. I mean, so, you know, for guys, when they get to that point and it's over, you know, when football's over, there's a, I mean, it's not the easiest thing to figure out what your next step is. And I don't know that a lot of those guys have those things ironed out, have those plans now, you know, for who wants to be a coach. And because it's, again, there's so many hours that you put in. I mean, it's such a grind that, I mean, you got to have a burning desire to do that deal. And some people try it, AP, and they go, wait a minute, this is way too many hours. This is a lot more than I ever wanted to get involved in. And some people fall in love with it. I think Parker Ball's fallen in love with it.
Yeah, I mean, again, just eat up, wants to be around the game, loves people, feels like he can make an impact.
Yeah, and then some people say they want to do it, and then they just won't do it. I mean, I left Jefferson County High School wanting to be the head coach of Jefferson County Patriots one day, and literally when I was in college, I never, like after a year of playing over there, I was like, I never want to coach ever in my life. I want to be around the game, and I never want to coach. So,
oh, it worked out well for Jefferson County.
That it did. That it did. Port City Vol, have you heard anything this preseason about Nico favoring a particular wide receiver or tight end during scrimmages or any receivers that have stood out from the rest in practice? I think we always, I mean, we saw it on Twitter, of course, but I mean, Ethan Davis gets brought up in this conversation a lot, right?
Yeah, but I think he's wondering is, does Nico have a Tillman like Hooker did before Tillman got hurt? I mean, you go back to that Pitt game, AP, and it was
22 targets.
I mean, it's just, we're just playing catch with my buddy out there was what that offensive passing game was that day. I don't know that there's anybody. I mean, he's got a relationship with Brew. I mean, I think that in, you know, there's a real trust factor there with Brew McCoy and Nico, but I don't know that he's got, quote, a favorite or a, quote, go-to all-the-time target.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's I think he'll spread it around pretty good.
Now, you got to remember, too, I mean, you go back to that Pitt game early in that year. I mean, Jalin Hyatt hadn't broke out yet, and Brew McCoy, who caught a touchdown pass in that game, was a new transfer guy. So you have, I mean, it only made sense that Tillman was the go-to guy for Hooker because he had 1,000 yards the year before with Hooker leading the way there. So it only made sense that's where you were going to go. Now, I mean, obviously Tillman got hurt, but it would not have been 20 targets for Tillman had he stayed healthy all year long because of the emergence of Jalin Hyatt and McCoy on the other side and what that receiver group evolved into as the season went along.
Need to go back and look at that box score because if memory serves me correct, I would imagine Hooker had somewhere around 30 to 35 attempts because it was an overtime game. 22 attempts, I remember it was either 21 or 22 attempts went to Tillman. Like thrown two, I guess. Hyatt had like 12 or 13 targets. So like, he barely looked Brew's way in that game. He did catch a touchdown down the sideline. It looked really good. That was a unique game for a number of different reasons. Marcus Square Streaker. National media guys were hyping Florida State's defensive line as one of the best in the country. What percentage chance is Tennessee's defensive line overhyped?
Well, I mean, I think that's – go ahead, AP.
Sorry. Well, all those guys are new, like new to the area. I mean, like Tennessee's got the same defensive line they had a year ago that was, you know, kicking butt and taking names. So I just don't like. I don't think you can say they're overhyped though. They overhyped Florida State's because Florida State brought in a bunch of, I don't want to call them mercenaries. I don't think that's the right word. They brought in a bunch of transfers that had either been highly thought of coming out of high school, like the Mims kid, or you know, played well at other places, and then all of a sudden you're asking them to go in there and you know, be a collective unit. Tennessee's unit has been a collective unit for well over a year, and then you sprinkle in, you know, some youth that you know can help them too. So I mean, I just think it's apples to oranges.
Yeah, and I think Florida State probably fell into a little bit of, hey, the last couple of transfers we got of that position were great. Look what Jared Verse did. What was the kid's name? Fresky or whatever that interior lineman was that transferred in from a smaller school who just wreaked havoc inside. Both of them are off to the NFL. And I think when you have that kind of hit, Austin, there's an assumption that everybody you bring in as a transfer is going to have that same type of impact right out of the gate. And that clearly was not the case. And again, I think you got to give Georgia Tech a lot of credit. But your point is absolutely spot on. This is a group that's been together. They're not a bunch of new people learning a new culture and a new coaching style. This is a group that's been together for a long time, which you would think would help them and not make that comparison that way. But I get where, I mean, after you see Florida State and all the hype they got and in the way they played, it's only natural that some people go, wait a minute now, we talking up Nico too much, or is there talk up of this guy too much, or this group, or this team, or this, that, the other. I think that's only a natural reaction when you see a team, you know, get upset the way Florida State did, even though that was against a quality, I mean, what is a better opponent than anybody wants to give credit for. Still, you went to Ireland and didn't play well.
Especially when Tim Banks kind of kicked off this conversation, and he wasn't meaning to do this, but by making that comment about being the best defensive line in the country back in spring, he stood on his statement in the fall. And then, of course, you had Joshua Joseph up there, just his one and only media appearance of the season, just going in on how great they're going to be on the defensive line. So I get where that's coming from. We'll get into a couple more here as we end the show. Dave Evall, what was your first thought when you heard that Josh Heupel was getting hired? What has surprised you the most about him now that you have covered him for a few seasons? Can be personality, can be coaching, can be recruiting-wise. What surprised you the most?
My first thought was, this is not going to move the needle with the fans. My second thought was, he's a morning practice guy. This is great for me. And what surprised me the most? That they've been able to flip it so fast. That they've been able to kind of just be who they are and be transparent. And it's resonated with kids and families.
For me, my first thought was with AP, it's not going to move the needle greatly. And then my second thought was, who do I know that might know him that could help me get in the door to create and build a relationship with him? Because that's the first thing you're looking for is there a common person that can help you, you know, kind of get in front of him and get to know him quicker so you can start to develop a relationship to cover that team and be able to work with him. What surprised me, the roster flip. Just what they've done with the roster. I mean, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, you thought coming in, Eric, given that offense and the way they score points and the way they throw it around and all those things, all right, he's going to be able to recruit some offensive players. But what kind of defensive guys are they going to look at? And you look at them on the defensive side of the ball and where they're at from a talent standpoint right now, it's pretty impressive what they've put together from a talent standpoint at all three levels. And so I think their ability to put a defense together talent-wise, when everybody says, well, you know, defense won't work when you have that kind of offensive system, they've done a really good job recruiting and putting a defensive roster together that's as talented as they've had in a long time over there.
And the production has been there all three seasons so far from the defensive line. It's been a good defensive line unit all 3 years, and you're recruiting and getting high caliber players to come and join that group. I would agree with you. Just the flip and the talent that's been attracted specifically over to defense. Let's go rapid fire here to end the show. I'm going to pick one of these questions from David Keith Fan. Rock, country, bluegrass, or instrumental, which is your favorite version of Rocky Top?
Do you woo?
My generation woos.
Bluegrass.
Mine's bluegrass. I love that version.
Yeah, I'm with that. I'm good with that.
AF Vol says, in your opinion, what is the one stat that will tell the tale when we look back at the season when it's over? What's one stat that we're going to say was kind of the point of this team?
Red zone efficiency. You know they're going to move it between the 20s.
Yeah. Can they finish in the red zone? I think offensively that's where it is. Again, 25 fewer red zone touchdowns in 23 compared to 22. For all the splash plays that weren't there, they struggled mightily to finish in the red zone with touchdowns. I think the stat is right. I've written it. I've got to go back and look at it. It's in 10 things, I think, for Friday. If you take out the Virginia game where they were 7-for-7 in the red zone, and then you take out the NECO game, the rest of the regular season last year, they were like 40% red zone touchdown efficiency.
Not good.
That's why you went 8-4. Okay. That's why you lost games, is that you didn't finish in the red zone well enough. You had to kick too many field goals. And when you look at that number, Tim Banks probably should get more credit than what he gets for what they did defensively to win him some ball games, like the Texas A&M game, because they were just really bad in the red zone. So that's my stat. It's been my stat for weeks.
Vols_127, has coaches Inge and Sims been on the opposing sideline for a Tennessee game inside Neyland, or will this be their first time? Correct me if I'm wrong, guys. Don't believe that Inge has ever been coaching against Tennessee.
Correct. Sims has, though.
Sims at Western Carolina coached here for a game. So that happened. And then finally, volunteered 87. Does Hyder have a leader, or do all top five teams have a shot at landing him, AP?
Yeah, I think it's still pretty early for Savion Hyder or Hitter.
Matt told me it's Hyder on Trail Tidbits. Check it out.
Okay, that's good. That's why Matt does that recruiting podcast.
That's why I got the expert.
He's Greg Maddox, and I'm just Mariano Rivera.
You're John Rocker.
No.
Mark Wohlers? No.
Gene Garber? Alejandro Pena. No, I don't believe he has a leader at this point. I think everybody's pretty even. At least I think everybody's got a real shot to get that kid's momentum here in the next 6 months.
Then the final question goes to us about Tony's contract. When was the first time you heard rumblings of a three at the beginning of Tony's new contract? If the morning after Omaha, if you were forced to set an over under, what would you have put it at? The morning after Omaha, I would have set the over under at probably 2.7, because I knew Corbin led the way at 2.45. And so I thought it would be more than that, of course. But I mean, Brent, we started hearing three, you know, a couple of weeks before it was announced. I mean, couple that with the national championship and the representation that Tony had, you knew it was going to be great. So the 3 million became a real possibility. I mean, you know, we heard chatter about that, you know, weeks before it was announced.
Yeah. And I mean, I think once Schlossnagel went to Texas, now his contract doesn't look like what we thought it was going to look like, but when he went there, you thought Texas would probably break the bank. Now, year three, I think his contract goes to like 2.8 or something like that.
After he's not making a lot of money his first 2 years.
Because he got the buyout stuff going on with A&M. But, you know, you knew he was going to be I knew once he won the national title, he was going to be the highest paid coach in baseball. The question was, would the highest paid coach in baseball be 2.7, 2.6, 2.8, or would it go to 3? And it ended up going to 3.
Get Jimmy Sexton on your team and you will get paid. And that is for sure.
That's what I've done. Of Jimmy being contacted.
Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor of this show. As always, 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. What was that rebuttal that I missed?
I said I'm not fighting Jimmy Sexton on anything.
We got Matt Ray. You can just let him walk right now. That's your leverage, Hubs. That's your leverage.
Is that right?
That's your leverage.
You're not in charge of the HR department, Kane.
Appreciate you guys for joining us here to send us in all the questions. Game week is rolling right along. Kickoff is in less than 3 days, and we'll have all the coverage for you right here at VolQuest.com.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.